Log Talk
Radio. Hey, everybody. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Get a Job. I am your guest host, Mike Jock, filling in tonight for Kathleen Brady, who's on vacation. The purpose of the show is to help job seekers navigate the chaos and confusion of looking for a job. No matter what the stage of your career, we think we can help find and offer you some interesting opportunities and interesting insights on how to make your job search easier, more effective, and offer you a lot more benefit through a more efficient search. We have archives of past shows on iTunes, and you can find those shows by searching for Life Coach Radio Network. You could also find them by searching Get a Job. You can find Kathleen's website at careerplanners.net, and she's also available on Facebook at careerplanners.net. Kathy's been using the show to take you through the mechanics of the job search process in a pretty systematic way. Tonight, we're going to shift the discussion a little bit to share some stories from my three guests that I'm going to introduce you right now. Our first guest is Sikandar Hashmir. He's a finance major in the Zicklin School of Business at Baruch College. He's very active in non-for-profit, and I would have to say probably one of the best networkers that I've come across in my experience. And he reached out to me on LinkedIn, and we've been friends ever since. Our second guest is Dylan Lounsbury. He's currently pursuing a bachelor's in business and entrepreneurship from Baruch Zicklin School of Business. He recently spent this summer at JP Morgan Sales and Trading Program, which I think he had some interesting experiences that he's going to share with you guys. He's also recently promoted to the Chief Executive Officer of Baruch's Student Managed Fund, the Investment Management Group. So welcome, Dylan. And last but certainly not least is Sarah Grillo, who got her CFA in 2007. She's an Italian-American entrepreneur, investment manager, and award-winning financial author and professor of finance. So we're very happy to have Sarah here on the call. She is the original Queen Bitchinaire. She actually authored the book Queen Bitchinaire, How to Rule Your Money and Your Man. So interesting title to that book. So we're excited about having Sarah here and learning more about some of the tips that she has with regard to helping and mentoring people through their job search. She's worked at a number of bulge bracket investment banks, including J.P. Morgan, Lehman Brothers, Merrill Lynch. She's went to Harvard, and also got an MBA from NYU. So a long list of credentials that Sarah has. She also has a number of great websites and other tools that you can take advantage of, based outside this call. So Sarah could expand a little bit upon that as well. So I just want to thank everybody for being here. And we have a lot to cover tonight. So, let's get started. The one thing we do is we hope that this really serves everybody, no matter where they are in their job search, whether they're a new graduate, approaching graduation, or maybe in the middle of a midlife career change. And I think that with the guests we have here and their perspectives could help any one of those of you who are on this call, and no matter what stage of your search that you're in. One of the things as a coach and some of the things that I come across when mentoring people is really trying to uncover what they want to do in life and what they want out of their career. So, Sarah, I'll ask you the first question. When talking to your clients or people that you mentor or your students, what do you suggest for them in determining, you know, what they ultimately choose to do?
I think it involves a very hard look at your personality and what your natural tendencies are. For years, I tried to be an analyst, and at one point, I was even a very quantitative analyst when I was at Lehman Brothers, and that entailed a lot of spreadsheet work. Now, I think it takes about 3 seconds for someone meeting me to know that I'm the most outgoing person, I can't sit still, and I can't keep my mouth shut. So it was really the opposite of what I should have been doing with my life. And I figured out once I was laid off that, you know, I didn't really want that job anyway. So it was a kind of blessing in disguise. And once I figured out that I was meant to be an entrepreneur and a salesperson and a relationship manager, you know, that I could sell things instead of being that kind of behind-the-desk spreadsheet person, I flourished. So what I first encourage people to do is kind of look at the roles that they naturally fall into in life. Are you, you know, for example, the person that's always the wingman when you and your buddies go out to a bar? Well, maybe you should do something, you know, selling products or something like that because you're outgoing and that's the kind of skill you need for that role. Are you the kind of person that, you know, when you and your buddies go to lunch or dinner, are you the person that always calculates the check, right? Are you the person mm-hmm. that people go to when they need troubleshooting for their computer? So what I'm saying is, you know, you got to look at it's nature versus nurture. Definitely your education and what you think you should be doing plays a part in your path, but also to kind of look inside of yourself and figure out, well, you know, what am I just really good at naturally? And then, you know, students always ask me, what can I do to do this? How do I do this? How do I do that? You know, me telling you what to do for your career is kind of like me telling you what your hairstyle should be. You've got to get out there and experience it yourself. So I always say, get an internship, shadow people. Sometimes it's hard to do for my students and my mentees to approach people they don't know. We can talk about that later on the call, but, you know, it's kind of like I can't describe a hairstyle to you and have you know whether or not it works for you. You've got to go and find out yourself by trying.
Right, right. That's an excellent point. So a lot of times, so what you're saying is, sometimes we have to dig deep inside ourselves and understand what really drives us and what motivates us and what resonates with us to sort of help chart out that that career choice.
That's right.
So it makes sense. And one thing I want to do is I've done some of the listeners who may not have heard of you, I did some reading on you today. Since we've only been introduced to each other a couple of weeks ago, and I just want to commend you on making a job change and a little bit of shift in your career following the crisis, you know, the subprime crisis of 2008, and really kind of discovering what it was you wanted to do and your commitment to financing and kept plugging away within the industry to now, you know, owning your own firm. So it's running your own firm, so it's very impressive. So I wanted to share that with some of our listeners, and I'm sure more of that and more of your journey to where you are today will come out later in the call. So I just want to commend you on that and share some of your accomplishments with some of our listeners.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's well, definitely well deserved. Dylan, in terms of where you are, you're also kind of charting out a career as you approach getting your degree. What are you doing personally to determine what you want to do and where you want to take your career?
Yeah, sure. It's a good question. I think an important point is that it doesn't matter how old you are, a lot of people who have experience or don't have experience can say the same thing. I still don't know what I want to do. So if you're a college student, high school student, whatever it is, young professional, don't put too much pressure on yourself to figure out exactly what you want to do. You just want to put yourself in the right place to take advantage of opportunities that present themselves as you go through your career. But there's definitely certain things that you can do to help you figure out what you want to do and then chart the course to sort of to get there. What I did to kind of figure out what I wanted to do was I already knew I had somewhat of an interest in the financial markets, but never really had anybody to talk to about it to find out if I was really interested in it. So I got a career counselor at school at Brew College and happened to be somebody who had finance experience. So I had asked her a lot of questions, and she had put me in touch with different people who I could sort of pick their brains and ask some questions about the industry. Also, there's career assessments that I did with a career counselor, such as the Strong or the Myers-Briggs. This tells people what sort of field you might want to go into, what sort of major you want to choose. And then once you actually choose a major, so for me, when I originally chose finance, I asked myself, what skills do I need in order to do well in this field? For instance, Excel. And in finance, Excel is a very important skill. And if you think you can go into finance without having that skill set down, you're wrong. It's like going to another country and thinking you're going to fit in if you don't fit the if you don't speak the language. So I knew I needed to put a lot of emphasis on Excel and other things as well. So yeah, I would say just don't have a strict path to success. Just kind of be able to go with the flow. But there are resources out there, such as your career counselors, your family, your friends, people who are already in the field that you might want to get into, that you can sort of ask questions and figure out if, based off of their responses, if that's the area of interest for you.
No, that's a great question. You definitely highlight a couple of things that I think are important. One is, utilizing resources that are available to you, and there's a tremendous amount of resources. Like you said, if you're still in school, there's opportunities within the school to get mentoring and, maybe some help in your job search. The other thing which I think is really important, it sort of goes back to just enjoying the ride and not thinking too much in particular about where you are at any point in time. Just set your sights on that bigger goal and basically see where that goal takes you. And if it's a good goal with, a strong fundamentals behind it and a well-thought-out plan, you just kind of follow that path and you'll ultimately get to where you want to go and not really stress too much along the way and just accept it as the journey and, follow that path.
Right.
Cool. No, that's great. Great advice. And, Sikandar, somebody who, first of all, I want to thank you for introducing me to the Baruch's mentoring program, where I eventually got in touch was introduced to Dylan and now to Sarah. So thank you for making those connections for me.
You're welcome.
You do an amazing job networking. What I love about your background is that you always looking to give before you receive through your work in nonprofit. Maybe you could kind of elaborate on what Sarah and Dylan were talking about in terms of, how you decided what you want to do, how the involvement in sort of, the nonprofit has helped you achieve what you've achieved and got you to where you are so far.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you guys for inviting me on the call. And just a little adjustment, I recently graduated from Baruch College this past semester. So I'm no more a student, but definitely looking forward to come back to Baruch. I wanted to elaborate a little bit about nonprofit, as Sarah Grillo just mentioned, that it's just like a haircut. Nobody can tell you what fits your personality, or nobody can tell you going to this line of business or finance over another. It's a journey that I took, and the way that I sort of figured it out that I wanted to eventually go into sales is when I was a junior, I got involved with the Baruch alumni, Mr. Joseph Sway Anthony, who co-founded a nonprofit called Project Empower. And the core purpose of Project Empower was to work with middle schools and high school across Queens and Brooklyn and teach them business case studies. And over through the process, I realized that I really liked meeting people. I really like to work on projects that are short-term. And every day if I wake up and I wanted to do something new, that was sort of the life or the job description that I wanted. And as you mentioned, I reached out to you almost a year and a half ago over LinkedIn. We communicated. And this communication over the past year with me and Mike Jassy really helped me understand in terms of where in sales and trading, what products that I feel much more comfortable going towards trading or sales in. And it took me a year. And as Dylan mentioned as well, it takes time. And it's really good if you start doing this earlier in your career around junior or sophomore year in your college and get involved with organization, multiple organizations, so one does not have a very subjective opinion about one line of business. So I was involved with organizations that were going towards investment banking and coverage. Some clubs that I went to attend their meetings were in sales and trading. Some were more on the equity research, pure quant research. So I kind of realized which one that I want to do, which one I don't want to do, and that's how I figured it out. And in the long run right now, I founded another nonprofit called Lead Me to Success, which tries to match mentors with students. And in doing so, I'm meeting different people every day from banking to residency to research to medicine. And this is how I'm trying to figure out and keeping myself positive in terms of, like, what is my next move. So I live my life one day at a time, but it's definitely been very, very rewarding once you understand where you're going and what is that you really like to do when you wake up in the morning. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's amazing. I really love the way you you kind of summarized it all, because there's a lot that you said in a short amount of time. And the last thing that you said is probably the most important, and that is, you know, waking up and really loving what you do, because over, you know, let's say over a year, 2 years, you could almost grin and bear almost anything. And we're all very resilient individuals, especially accomplishing what all of you have accomplished. Obviously, you know, there's definitely a certain amount of adversity that we all experience in our careers and life in general that may take us off course. But if every morning, or most mornings at least, you're not waking up and bouncing out of bed because you're doing what you love to do, makes for a really long and you know, difficult career and potentially unrewarding. And when you find that thing that really drives you and that really you become passionate about, you sort of spring out of bed and you just have like a totally different perspective on life. And I think when you look at your work in not-for-profit and really servicing, and all three of you, what I love about the three of you and the little that I know about, you know, as I get to learn more and more about you guys, is that you're always willing to give before you receive. And I am a true believer in, you know, the more you give, the more you get. And you guys are definitely examples of that. So encouraging people to give, to be involved in not-for-profit, always thinking about what you can do for somebody else before wondering what they could do to you is in my estimation, you know, a great way to get somebody to actually do more to help you than you're helping them. And the tables quickly turn when you have an unselfish approach to your life and business. So thank you for sharing that. One of the things that, you know, so we talked a little bit about charting that course. I think we talked, you know, pretty much summarized it by finding out what really drives you and trying to find what you're passionate about. Follow that passion, trying to understand you know, what kind of drives you and what your bigger goals are, and reach for those goals and basically, chart that course as best as you can, just kind of following those goals. One of the ways that we use to get to where we want to get to, and we all kind of touched upon it, is our ability to network, whether it's in school, whether it's through doing, you know, not-for-profit work. Sarah, I'd like to come back to you and ask you, in your opinion, what are some of the business, the biggest networking secrets that you've used and that you can share with some of the listeners in terms of really effective ways to just build that network and leverage that network?
The thing that's worked best for me is every meeting I go into, no matter what happens, I try to make it a positive experience in which I give. So during the course of the conversation, it might turn out that we end up not arranging to do business together, but I always keep the door open and I tell them, you know, I ask them what they do. The first thing is you really have to make people talk about themselves. We're all egotistical people, and there's nothing that anybody likes more than the sound of their own name or than talking about themselves. A lot of my students and my mentees will say to me, you know, I can't approach someone I don't even know. I can't go to a networking function, and especially for the women, a lot of times they're scared to go to things alone. You know, and I say, why don't you just try it? Go up to somebody at a networking function and say, hi, how are you? And then they'll, you know, watch what they say, and then smile and watch what they say, and then say, tell me a little bit about what you're involved with. And then they'll maybe talk about work, or they might say, hey, you know, well, I have a job in finance, but I also love parasailing. And then just let them talk and ask questions about it, because people will have a positive impression of you if you talk with them about something that makes them feel good. And then the way I end the conversation, you know, and I people think networking is going up to people and you know, being a walking resume and bombarding them with facts about what you do. People are not going to remember, we are egotistical and self-centered by nature. We're not going to remember anything about the other person after the networking function is over. What they will remember, though, is if you are attached or connected to them in some way. So what I do is every conversation I end, I always say, so tell me, what is professionally keeping you up at night? Is there anything I can help you with? And you'd be surprised at things people say. Some people say, and it helps me for my networking, because some people will say, well, you know, Sarah, you told me you're a money manager. What do you think of bonds? Or other people say, hey, you know, I heard that you're a college professor. I have a child in college. What do you think? I mean, so not related at all to my business sometimes, you know. Or some people say, well, you know, I'm looking for a real estate. I need to change offices. That helps me with my connections, because I have connections that are realtors. It helps their business, and then you never know when they'll refer a client back to me. So what I'm saying is give. You have to give yourself. You have to give yourself to other people and show that you're someone that wants to take action, that will take action to make their lives better professionally. And when you do, you will be so surprised at how much further giving goes than receiving. Because think about how many times, I mean, you walk down the street in Manhattan and people are asking you for things. You know, people are begging for money. People are asking you to take the metro. They need to hand you a metro so they get paid, you know. But if you give, it goes so much better.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you hit upon, like, two things. One is giving, and that's the point we just made a little bit earlier. Just the more you give, again, the more you get. And I think the other thing that may be a little bit more subtle is really just showing an interest in other people, being interested in the audience and who that person is. And it's a great way to build instant credibility, because the focus becomes them and not you. So not only are you building credibility with that individual, but you're taking the focus and the pressure off you, which kind of eases the conversation a little bit and reduces the fear of going up to that person, because you're going to make it all about them. It's not about you. And like you said, I agree 100%. People love to hear themselves talk. I actually make the same recommendations in interviews. And when I interview, I'm usually just asking a whole lot of open-ended questions that demonstrate my interest in them, their organization, and their issues within the organization. And you find that people love to talk, and you're going to have more engaging conversation when you're focused on the other person. And you stick in that person's head, I think. Because
right.
they look at you as somebody who isn't all about you, it's more about them. And I think it's a great way to differentiate yourself as well.
I mean, if I were a billionaire and I went to, you know, a financial convention with a billion financial planners there, you know, I would go home and I would say to, you know, I would say to Antonio, I would say, yeah, you know, I talked to 25 financial planners today. They all gave me the spiel about how great their practice is, and then one of them actually talked to me about that he's a track runner, and we had a great conversation about running the, you know, the marathon. So it would stick out in my mind. You know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely. Let me just take a second to announce to any of our listeners that if anybody wants to call in and ask any of our guest questions, the guest call-in number is 646-716-9397. Again, that's 646-716-9397. We're all available for any questions that you may have. So, yeah, thank you, Sarah. Those are great. I don't think there's a better way to build your network than what you just said. And also, one of the other things is the fear, and reduce the fear, right? So we're building a network and reducing that fear associated with building that network, because we're basically focusing on the other person. At the same time, it accomplishes all the things we want to accomplish. And when people say things like, you know, I have to get my elevator pitch kind of ready or prepared, it makes me nervous, because you automatically are focused when you talk about elevator pitches. And it's fine to have something prepared when somebody does ask about you, but to lead in with that is probably, you know, a great way to push people away. And if we all think about sales and us being approached by salespeople who have that elevator pitch, it's a huge, I don't know about you guys, but it's a huge turnoff. It's a huge turnoff to me. Now, as you get deeper in the conversation, somebody says, oh, so Sarah, that's, you know, it's awesome. What do? And you have, you know, some of those bullet points that you want to get across at that particular point. Now you have that person exactly where you want them, because now they're interested in you, and it opens up the door for you to have that conversation. So I think that's a great tip. In terms of, so just to elaborate on that a little bit more, Dylan, what are some of the techniques that you've used to build your network, and what have been, you know, some of your successes, and maybe you could, you know, point to, if there's been any failures, what some of those failures are and what you would avoid?
Sure. One thing that I've always thought was helpful in making me successful in building my network was not being very narrowed in on who my network should be. A lot of people who are trying to go into professional services or whatever it is, and they want to use networking to help them get there, they think, okay, I want to work in, let's say, banking, so I need to talk to anyone who does banking, and that's all I'm focused on. But really, you have to have an open mind. Going back again, you have to have an open mind, and you need to have a broad network. So instead of looking at people in banking, look at people in other areas of the business. Look at your classmates, because they're looking for similar positions, and they might know people who have a position that they weren't good for, but maybe you would be good for, or perhaps they know people who are in the industry that you can talk to that they already spoke to. You need to be able to network with your professors, because a lot of times your professors are people from the industry. So for me, just having an open mind with who my network is, one thing I've actually done is talk to my family, not just the people I live with, but my aunts and my uncles, let them know. say I'm currently in my, let's say, junior year in college, and I'm looking to break into the field of finance. Do any of you guys happen to know people in this field or anybody who knows people in this field that you'd be willing to put me in touch with so that I can ask them some questions about what they do? That's definitely a good way to approach it. And in terms of getting over the fear of going to these networking events or just networking in general, the key is going to be repetition. You got to get used to it. A little story from one of my first networking events a few years ago. I remember I put on a suit, and it was like an old suit because I never really wore it, so it looked like it was my dad's. It was really baggy. And I went to this career fair, and I saw my career counselor, who I kind of knew at the time, and saw her a couple times, and I said, wow, this is really, really nice. It's kind of intimidating, but it's fun. There's so many different employers here. And she said, get used to it. And at the time, I was thinking, well, what do you mean? Like, this is the career fair. I'm supposed to get a job and never do this again. But I thought about it, and since then, I've done probably 50 networking events, and now you look at it with a totally different mentality. You don't go in there with a fear. You just got to get used to it. Go in there, talk to people, and use the strategies that Sarah was just discussing and Mike were just discussing, because you don't want to go in there straight hit them with your elevator pitch. You want to sort of build a rapport and then get them to ask you a little bit about yourself. In terms of where my efforts have maybe failed me in networking, thinking I don't have to prepare in certain cases. Now that I've had a couple good internships under my belt and I've done these networking events and I think I can just walk right in there and hit it out of the park, that's definitely something that I've done that can definitely set you up for failure. I think some other people do this as well. So, for instance, anytime you go into an event and you want to talk to somebody, in general, you want to do some research on what they do or what their firm does so that you can have some talking points and some ways to connect with them. So no matter how much experience you have, if it's a couple good internships or if it's 10 years in a certain industry, you have to do the research and go in there and have some talking points that you want to connect with that person on. And one more way that I've probably failed myself a little bit is not following up with some of my connections in my network as often as I should. For instance, I think it's appropriate in order to build a relationship and stay in touch with somebody to touch base with them every month or 2 months probably. And oftentimes you get busy and you don't get around to sending that email or sending that article and saying, hey, I thought of you, or just reaching out for a coffee or lunch. And if it goes 3, 4, 5, 6 months, there's a good chance that person that you met at that event might just forget you. So definitely important to follow up and stay in touch every month or two.
It was a great point. So you kind of elaborated on some of what Sarah said, but I think you brought up two major points that are worth repeating. One is just prepare. So have a good sense of what the organization is that you might be, let's say, interviewing for. And one of the ways to show that you've prepared is, again, focusing on them, understanding what their business is, understanding what some of the hurdles they may be facing, some of the issues they may be having, and asking specific targeted questions, well-thought-out questions regarding their organization, which lets them know you've done your research, but not just spitting back facts. And the other thing I think is key is following up. And I want to, follow up by, chatting with Sikandar about the follow up, because he's done a great job on that front with regards to his relationship that he built with me. But we do have one caller, so
okay.
Let me see if I could get them on the line and see what they are like to ask or have to say. Hold on one second.
Hello?
Did you call in?
Yeah, I did.
Hi, who's this?
It's Mohammed Chaudhry.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Excellent, thanks for calling in. What can we help you with tonight?
Okay, so my question to you is, what if you go to an internship and you change your mind, you don't want to do banking or finance, what do you do then?
Okay, that's a great question. So you're saying you've done an internship after that you feel like you might not want to be in the finance field, what do you do then? Is that correct?
Yes.
So maybe recharting that course a little bit from what you originally anticipated.
Okay.
Would you like, Harry, you want to
give this a try?
Okay, sure.
Yeah, so just to address the question, if you go into a certain internship or a job thinking you're going to like it, and then you're just not sure, once you get there, you're just like, you know what, I'm not sure. I don't think I really like this. It's not what I thought it was going to be. I think this happens to a lot of people, and it happens all the time. I can sort of relate to this because this past summer I did a internship at J.P. Morgan in sales and trading, which is a very niche area. It's a very competitive area, and there's not really any room for error. If you kind of mess up or slow down, you're gonna get passed. People are gonna run right over you. I have a very salesy background, and it's something that I really enjoy doing because I like talking to people. And I like learning about their needs. So I figured that sales, the sales part of sales and trading, would be perfect for me. But looking back at my experience, I think that there's a lot of other areas that I can go into and do sales outside of sales and trading. So for me, it's not that I don't necessarily want to do sales and trading right now, but I sort of felt it out. And I learned from the experience, and now I'm starting to do research in other areas of firms like J.P. Morgan to determine where else can I use this sales skill set, where can I use my transferable skills to go somewhere else. Instead of saying, no, I don't want to be in finance anymore, I just said, what is it that I didn't like about the experience, and where can I go to utilize this skill set and get a little bit of a different experience. So you just have to look back at what it is that you were actually attracted to a certain position by in the first place, and then see if there's other areas of professional services or whatever it is that would be able to use that same curiosity and that same interest.
Yeah, that's great. Definitely great advice. And, you know, it's sort of what we talked about a little bit earlier about following the interest, following what you're not only following your interests, but broadening your horizons by expanding the possibilities out there for you and not focused in sort of this narrow range of possibilities. So you may like finance, or you may be in finance, you may be in sales, but maybe selling financial products isn't what interests you. Maybe it's doing sales for another industry. So opening up that opportunity around something that you like, something that you have a skill set in, but seeing what other opportunities there are that allow you to leverage those skills, leverage what really resonates with you, potentially taking it as far as the industry goes.
Right.
Yeah, just a quick
anybody else want to add in?
Yeah, I definitely want to add into this point. Given my past internship experience, actually also in sales and trading within the same firm as J.P. Morgan, after I also got an opportunity to intern within the buy side for Russell's within the hedge fund, what I particularly did not like the functionality, and I can definitely relate to when someone is just at this point where they can't really see farther in terms of how the transferable skills will follow through, maybe not just in finance, but a different career. So what I did was I actually took down a piece of paper. On that piece of paper, I actually did write the kind of things in that particular job, what I liked and what I did not like. And then just by using basic Google search, I used those words or those traits and adjectives that perfectly fit that job description to see which other careers are there. And that actually led me to my next internship, which was in television channel sales and marketing, which is totally different than finance. And I did that for 2 months over the summer in 2012, and I really liked it. Why I came back to sales and trading within the same finances, I did my homework again and retracked myself. And I think that's what we have been talking from as we started the call, is it's a process. It's not a yes or no question. But if you do come to a point where you see that that particular job function or that particular division is not something for you, you definitely have to give it a try for other division and do your research. It all falls back to how strengthly, how convicted you are for which line of business you are going forward to.
It's a great, no, you raise an excellent point. And the Google search, when you talked about the Google search, it made me think of something as I look at my own career and think about what's in store for me in the next stage of my career, is maybe seeking out a job description, looking at job boards, or seeking out job descriptions that you think fit your personality, fit what you want to do, and start charting the course to that particular job versus what you think you have to do or what your parents think you have to do. Just finding the job that fits what you're looking for out of a job and you know, kind of leverages those, you know, a skill set, but also really more along the lines of what resonates with you and your personality. And then build a skill set around achieving or getting that particular job or spotlight or jobs like it. So you raise a couple of great points on that, you know, that last question. We have another caller, so let me bring that caller in and see what they have to say. Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Yeah, hi.
This is Mike Johnson.
I have a question.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
You have a question or a comment, and would you like to direct it to anybody in particular?
I have a question and a comment, too.
Sure.
My comment is, it is a really good talk, and I'm really enjoying and I'm learning a lot of stuff. And I have a question. And my question is that I have recently graduated with the accounting degree. But unfortunately or fortunately, I'm not really sure as of yet, but I got a job in a banking industry. It is not really related to accounting, but I'm a little iffy about should I continue with the banking or should I just wait and let the accounting, let another opportunity come in.
Okay. I didn't get your name. What was your name again?
Mm-hmm. Hello?
Hello?
Sorry?
Yeah, I didn't get your name. What was your name?
Mm-hmm. It's Sarah, S-A-R-A.
Okay, I'm sorry. Oh, we have two Sarahs on the call. So, Sarah, did you get that question?
Name.
Would you like to would you like to help Sarah out?
Sure. So, how do you feel about the job that you have now?
As of now, I'm just starting. I just started, so it's not like I'm really into the work. But I personally feel guilty from inside, because it's not something what I studied about. I'm learning a lot of stuff when I go there, but it's not like I learn from school.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Senorita, do you know what I majored in college?
Mm-hmm.
Now,
no.
I'll tell you that I actually am a CFA charter holder. That is a financial designation that a lot of portfolio managers have. I've worked in finance since the year 2004. Before that, mm-hmm. I worked at J.P. Morgan. I worked at a bank, okay? I
mm-hmm.
have an MBA. I
mm-hmm.
I am a professor of finance, and I just wrote a book about finance, okay? My
mm-hmm.
degree in college was in English literature.
Really?
Yes, it was. I was so lost when I was in college. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I actually wanted to be a backup dancer for Janet Jackson. Trust me, I'm one of the flyest chicks on the block. You know, if you meet me, you'd know. But I actually, when Janet Jackson came toured in Boston, where I went to school, I actually was, like, going to go to the tryout, okay? I really had no idea. I wanted to be a radio VJ. I had just had no idea what I wanted to do. I, you know, would never hold my parents accountable for telling me or being a role model for my career. There are plenty of people out there that could have done that, right? But, you know, I didn't have someone that was, like, a really successful doctor in my family that I could say, oh, yeah, you know, I kind of would want to do that. It just was not, you know, it wasn't presented to me. And so I really had no idea. I had to declare my major when I was a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
And I just took what was easy for me because I speak Spanish also. And I speak Italian. Yeah, so I had to work like 20 hours a week when I was in college. So I took a curriculum that I could do at the same time I was working and I could still get good grades. Okay? And I got into the business world and I just found that working in finance, it was really helpful for me to have that English degree because I could communicate and I could write. So what I'm saying is don't think that just because, you know, you major in English literature, you have to go be a writer. I mean, I'm now a financial writer. And what makes me different from a lot of the other financial writers and a lot of the financial professors is that I'm creative, you know, because I have that English background. And I'm also a very punchy, very succinct communicator because, you know, I for 4 years studied how to write. So, you know, in other words, I'm not dry and boring. I'm not saying I'm better or worse than anyone else. I don't think anyone's ever called me boring. Okay, so what I'm saying is your unique skill set can be applied in different ways, but don't feel like it just has to be this line, this straight line that it's linear. It's not necessarily linear. And if you really learn something, that education is in your mind, and it can never be taken away from you. It goes with you everywhere. And you just never know when it can come in handy if you really live it and if you make it alive. You see what I mean?
She might have it looks like she might have dropped off, but hopefully still listening. And I'll make sure at the end you guys have you know, a few minutes to give out whatever contact information you want to give out. So anybody on the call could get in contact with you directly. But one of the things that I think you raised a great point and this is something that I try and tell, particularly finance majors who are kind of in finance because they think that's where they should be and they think that's the place to make the most money, but discover that it maybe isn't as rewarding as they wanted it to be, or the competitive nature of it has kind of been a little bit overwhelming to them, is try and marry maybe your skills with your passion. So if you're a finance major and happen to like the medical industry, then find the opportunities within the medical industry where finance is needed. For instance, my cousin is a CPA, and he happens to be the CFO of a major medical network of 100 or so doctors. So he's been in the medical field his whole life. It's something that resonates with him because he enjoys helping people, but he's also leveraged the fact that he's a CPA and has really kind of risen through the ranks to ultimately become a CFO. So it's kind of interesting. I work for KeyBank, so I am in the finance industry. I also share office space with people who work for L'Oreal, and one of the examples I always use is, you know, L'Oreal is a major makeup company and fashion and whatever else they're into, but there's finance people that work there too. So if fashion is something that is a passion of yours, but you happen to have a finance degree or you love sales, maybe there's a way to marry your passion with maybe your degree or your skill set. And you know, you raise great points about, you know, where you coming from, you know, an English major to where you are now, and now you're a business writer. And you've done it, you know, very successful at marrying those two skills and passions to be very successful at what you do. So it's great advice, and I think it just opens up the, you know, the opportunities for our, you know, for our listeners to kind of think outside the box, you know, because we live in a world where it's almost like people, you know, the people around us are pigeonholing us, and then we put those boundaries on ourselves. They're artificial boundaries, but yet once we start kind of peeling back the onion as to who we are and what we want, we find these whole, you know, a whole realm of possibilities for us, and all of a sudden
the world looks a lot bigger and the opportunities look a lot greater. So, you know, it's funny how these the hour goes pretty quickly. We're about 50 minutes into the show. We have about 10 more minutes. So what I'd like to do is talk quickly. Maybe each one of you will start with Sikandar, maybe go to Dylan and then Sarah. What do you think are some of the intangibles that if you had to advise somebody on things that they should bring to the table, what are some of the intangibles that maybe you have or you would recommend, you know, somebody you were mentoring to discover that has been valuable to you, your job search and getting you to where you are today? So, Sikandar, if you would like to start with, you know, that question.
Yeah, so thank you for this question. But it's a very, very interesting question, and more so than me and Dylan, people who are in the industry fairly new. We've gone through this question in our interviews in terms of what do we bring to the table for the firm and some question of this sort. And I think personally my answer is very genuine to myself. And we have to figure out what is the true bottom line that we're bringing to the firm. For me, I think that coming from overseas, from Pakistan, understanding multiple languages, multiple cultures, and one of the most prominent things that I offer to a firm and I've communicated over and over again is a culture that I bring with my personality. Also, a personality that is very easily malleable in terms of the culture of the firm. So I understand the fact that if I'm going to be going to a firm where I have to adjust to certain norms, I can make myself best to that. Another thing that I personally feel that I can add is a big picture understanding of processes. Whereas new analysts like myself and Dylan, when we go into banks or firms, we always want to understand how is that we can actually make millions or billions of dollars for the firm or the company that we're working for. And in essence, it's not the way to think. I personally feel like we have to see the whole process in terms of whatever small job that we are doing, whatever part of the puzzle that we're trying to solve in bigger 3,000 level perspective, where that fits and how we're going to be impacting the bottom line from that. And that's something that always has helped me in my first day of job or first month of job as well. Always asking my manager that, what if I don't do this, what will be an impact? So not so much of how, but why, and what is that that I'm actually doing, and what is the job function is going to be pertaining. That's something that really helped me in my interviews and after securing a job, the first few months or weeks of understanding the business.
Right. So you kind of very upfront, very early on in the process, got an understanding of what was expected of you. So it allowed you to be someone who could roll up their sleeves, fit into the culture pretty quickly, and get to work.
Exactly.
And clarified a lot of that stuff up front, as opposed to coming into a job not knowing what was expected of you and being a little bit of a fish out of water.
Exactly. It's a very competitive world in finance. You know, Sarah, and you know for sure. We have to change. New regulations are coming in. New processes are coming in. People want younger talent or newer talent to be much more faster to adapt to these changes and sort of like also understand what is going on the back end of the picture. What is a CEO thinking when they're making these changes? Or what is SEC or why these regulators are bringing these issues to the table now? What is their impact and what is our impact? So that we have to figure both sides of it, and then that makes our job easier.
No, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Well, I don't know if we're going to get back to you, given that we're running out of time. So would you
do you want to tell the audience the best way to reach out to you in the event they want to network with you and get in touch with you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the best way to network with me, or like my how I went along doing that.
No. How to get in touch with you, to network with you. Like, is it LinkedIn, Facebook, email? Like,
definitely.
If you'd like to give that information out.
Yes. So you can definitely email me as SIKANDAR.HASHMI, which is Sikandar.Hashmi@gmail. And you can also find me on LinkedIn with the first name Sikandar Hashmi. And I think you might just provide like a little bit of script on the bottom of this link where the correct spelling. So that will be the best way to reach out to me through email or LinkedIn.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining the call. Jillian, in maybe like a minute or so, what was some thoughts that you'd like to leave our listeners with as you kind of, you know, think about your journey and where it's going? And also, if you would be kind enough to give your contact information out for our listeners.
Sure. If there's one thing that I can tell people to do that will help them get where they want to go, it's read. Very simple. Just read. Read every day. There's a lot of different things you can read. You can read books. You can read research reports. You can have daily email subscriptions to, for instance, like the Wall Street Journal puts out something called the Morning Market Beat, where they have a couple professionals get up at like 5 in the morning and type up all the news for the day. So read anything you can get your hands on. Read on the train. Read while you're walking to class. Just be careful. read as soon as you wake up. Read before you go to sleep. Knowledge is power. And in order to become smart and become well-rounded and get where you want to go, you're going to have to explore different areas, and one good way of doing that is reading. With that said, a couple books that I definitely recommend people read, people who are looking to advance their careers, become more self-aware, get better at networking, two books. One is Never Eat Alone by Keith Ferrazzi, and the other book, which was recommended to me by Mike actually, is Heart, Smarts, Guts, and Luck. Both books are excellent reads, so definitely do that. And as far as reaching out to me, feel free to send me an email or connect with me on LinkedIn. My email address is dillonlounsbury@gmail.com. That is DILLONLOUNNANCY, S as in Sam, B as in boy, URY@gmail.com. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Excellent. Thanks for being here, Dillon. And speaking of great books, the author of Queen Bitchinaire, which is available on Amazon Kindle. Sarah, what closing thoughts would you like to leave us with, and what's the best way for members of our audience to get in touch with you?
So my thought is, for Generation Y and X, you've really got to get up with social media. Have a personal Facebook page that is separate from your business Facebook page, and Twitter also have a separate business profile. Use LinkedIn. These things are all free, and the world is sprinting towards the cell phone. Now, because we're running out of time, I'm just going to tell you, everybody should visit my YouTube channel. That is, just type in my name, SaraGrillo. I am Sarah Grillo. This is free advice. I talk about a million career topics on that. Go ahead, watch my videos. They're completely free. And if anyone has questions, just reach out to me. Type in my company name, that's Grillo Investment Management, into Google. Okay, so I am Sarah Grillo, Grillo Investment Management, like the word Brillo, like Brillo pad, only with a G. Okay, Grillo Investment Management. And you can just find my email there and reach out to me there. Or you could find my, you know, type in my company to Facebook. I have a company Facebook page. You could type in Queen Bitchinaire into Twitter or Facebook and reach me that way. Okay?
Thank you so much, Sarah. It's so great having you on the show. I'm looking forward to getting to know you more and follow your career and your success down the line. So thanks so much. What I'd like to do is just promote a couple of our next shows here on Blog Talk Radio, the Life Coach Radio Network. You can find them again archived on iTunes by typing in life by typing in Life Coach Radio Network. Our next three shows coming up are Battle the Burnout and Get Your Spark Back with Life Coach Barbara Herzl, a great dear friend of mine, Joel Reedens, and Leanne Parsons. That's tomorrow at 12. Friday at 1, it's Train Your Brain to Up Your Game with Coach Mandy. Again, that's 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on Friday. And finally, How to Use Metaphors for Power, Clarity, and Inspiration with Coaches Annette Johnson, Deb Gockman, and Carrie Spaulding. I'm sure you'll find some great information there as well. That show is Saturday at noon on Life Coach Radio Network. I want to thank all of our guests for being here. You guys did a great job. It was my pleasure chatting with you and gaining knowledge through all of your experiences and your openness, and really appreciate you sharing all of your thoughts and being open and candid and informative to our listeners. So we look forward to seeing you on future shows, and we wish you guys a great night.
Thank you for having us.
Great. Thank you. Bye now.
It was, hey, my pleasure.
Good night,
guys.
Good night.